You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
All right. If you have your Bible with you, I encourage you to open it to Matthew. It'll be up on the screen here as well. I just want to give you a little bit of background on what, if you've been around and have read any of the Bible, this is often one of the stories that might surface, you might be familiar with. It's sometimes called the parable of the sheep and the goats. But I wanted to give you an idea of the context of where it sits in the whole broader story. It's a passage today that gives us a glimpse of Jesus' very last teaching, the very last bit of what he's doing before everything starts to wrap up in Jerusalem. Right before this story, the scribes and the Pharisees are condemned. They're denounced for their rejection of the Messiah, and they are so in trouble. That's the way the whole thing comes across. Ooh. And then we move on to the story of the faithful and the unfaithful servants. We've got the parable of the talents, and then this parable of the sheep and goats. All of them designed to kind of say, this is what's good, and this is not so good. This is what you do when you're a follower of Jesus, and this is what you want to try and avoid. It's all pretty in your face, and you can see it if you read it there, that these are the basics of what it means to follow Jesus. And then right after all of these things, Jesus basically says, okay, the jig is up. This is it. I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to get killed. Okay, I'm going to die. And so it's in your hands, basically. So I don't know if any of you have teaching experience or speaking experience or whatever, but I tend to see that when you're trying to make a point, that you often leave the main point that you want people to remember towards the end, right? So this is the last thing that Jesus says to his disciples in Matthew before he goes off to Jerusalem. So I would put it up there pretty high in the, this is the way I'd like you to behave. Some of you know Philip Felker from the first service. He is a docent from the Phoenix Art Museum. And when he saw the text that I was using for today, he sent me a picture of one of the 17th century paintings that he uses in his one of his talks. This is called The Seven Affairs of Charity. And it's kind of a visual aid. When you look at it really close, you can see from left to right, it's basically a physical representation of this passage that we're talking about. And you see that it's trying to help people remember the stuff we're supposed to do, because from left to right, it's feeding the people, clothing the people, caring for the sick, inviting strangers into the inn, giving water to the people, and all the way over to the far right, you see visiting prisoners. Now, I think this is important, because God knows we need a visual aid on this one, because otherwise we're not doing so good. Even though I think it's crystal clear in our text that action on behalf of and with those who our culture ignores or leaves behind is one of the determining factors of whether we're really following Jesus or not, we really have a hard time actually believing that. In fact, we'd really like to kind of say, well, I'd rather just believe the right stuff, because, you know, I don't want to actually have to do it, because that's where it gets really hard. You've got a lot of things working against you. We all do as Americans, because we have this cult of rugged individualism that says, hey, it's all about me, baby, and I can do it by myself. I don't need anybody else. I don't need help from anyone. And we convince ourselves that we're independent of everybody else and that we can do it on our own. So clearly, you know, you look at people who are poor, who are suffering, who have not had the same opportunities that we've had, and you can say, wow, you know, God must be punishing them, right? Because faith, I mean, be honest, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when something bad happens in your life? What's the first thing that you have to push down because it comes right here to the front of your mind? What did I do to deserve this, right? That's the same thing at work here, right? It's so ingrained in the very depths of who we are. And if you think that that comes to the very front of your mind about yourself, what do you think it does when you see somebody that maybe is really struggling? You know, wow, they must have done something really bad to deserve that, you know? And who am I to mess with God's punishment, right? I don't want to get in the way there. So then Jesus comes along. Oh, always messing things up. And he says, sorry, any and all of those who suffer from the following hardships are not to be judged, but treated as you would treat me, treat as you would treat Jesus. Following hardships, hunger, thirst, nakedness, sickness, homelessness, imprisonment. Those are not to be judged. They're to be responded to as you would respond to Jesus. So do you got that? Y'all ready to practice that? I'm not so sure. You seem to get it. Maybe you guys here have got it down, but I look at our broader culture and I don't think we've got it. So give this a listen. And I think especially if you're an Ayn Rand fan, you really need to listen to this. So, ready?
When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Then he will say to those at his left hand, you that are accursed, depart from me into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me, naked, and you did not give me clothing, sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? Then he will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Let's pray. Loving Spirit, we're grateful for these words of wisdom that come to us from so long ago. May we hear them with new ears and open hearts so that as we seek the guidance of your Spirit, we might hear these words afresh for our lives, here and now. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. One day the local sheikh said to Mullah Nasruddin, let's disguise ourselves and go walk around the town. Let's walk around and see what things are really like. So they put on disguises and they started wandering through the market and through the town. And they were making their way and everything was going fine. Nobody recognized the king because he was wearing a disguise. So there was no hubbub or anything like that. But they paid no attention to the king, and yet many people smiled at Mullah Nasruddin. Well, the king hustled him right back to the palace and said, now hang on a second. I thought you said that you had never been around here, and yet it looks like you know a lot of the local people. What's up with that? And Nasruddin said, well, what are you talking about? And the king said, I saw them. A lot of those people smiled at you. Why did they smile at you? And Nasruddin said, Well, it must be because I smiled at them, right? You know, we've talked a lot about some of the really basic practices of loving kindness, things as simple as just offering a smile to someone. We've talked about how important approaching our relationship with others creatively, talked about how we need to look at one another and see the image of God in one another, the likeness of God in one another. We've talked about living with fearless compassion and relentless grace and making space for reality, no matter how hard making that space is. But whenever you're trying to make your way into this kind of way of being, of loving kindness, one of the attributes that I think is almost unparalleled in trying to get to this behavior, this essence of the sacred art of chesed, is doing this, doing right by others. Doing right by others. It's as simple as that. And it's not just anybody either. It's especially the powerless, the disenfranchised, those who can be of absolutely no help to you in your quest for success or respectability or whatever it is that you're aiming for. It's easy to be kind to people who can be of help to you in achieving your dreams, right? There's some motivation to do that. But all through his teachings, and especially distilled in our parable today, Jesus challenges us to measure our ability to practice kindness in relation to those who cannot further our goals, who cannot be responding to us with the same kind of loving kindness. The rabbis of Jesus' time, they actually set out as one of the highest forms of kindness as the practice of tending to the dead. Why? Why would you make that an important practice? Because the dead are the quintessential example of the least of these. I mean, they have, at least in my experience, they have very little capacity to benefit your schemes and your plans. So then taking into consideration reality, that most of us are actually having to deal with live people, right, most of the time, the question is, what hope do we possibly have of practicing this doing right by others? And I think, first off, we need to say we need to start off slowly. Rabbi Rami Shapiro, whose book I'm using to get this message going, says that he practices something that's based on a Japanese practice called Naikan in Japanese. It's actually a secular practice of Buddhism that's called Bodhisitta, is the closest I can get to how you pronounce it. And hardcore practitioners of this Bodhisitta, you're going to find them in caves, alone, with no food and no water, for days of sleepless meditation and self-reflection. Now, we've got a sign-up sheet in the back for those of you that are interested. You ready? You know, this is pretty hardcore discipline. And they are accompanied by facilitators that come once, maybe twice a day to reflect on them, or reflect with them on some simple questions, inquiring about their state of mind and their behavior, and seeing if they can learn anything about themselves. Now, since that level of practice may be more than I guess most of us would be willing to commit to right now, at least, Rabbi Rami has offered us a less extreme version of kind of dipping our big toe into this practice as a way of starting to make our move towards being more considerate and practitioners of loving kindness. It rests on three questions, and the three questions are, number one, what have I received today? Number two, what have I given today? And number three, I don't like this one, what difficulties have I caused today? You got that? Rabbi Rami says that he practices this Nikon when he's lying in bed at night before he falls asleep. And it gives him time to just focus and ask these questions slowly and allowing himself to kind of move through his day and see how he would answer each one of these questions. He asks, "What have I received today?" And he says, quote, "I am being gifted by people all the time. Mostly quiet gestures, holding a door, picking up papers that I've dropped, things we often take for granted. We hurry through our day, giving little attention to all the little things that we are receiving. But are these things really little? It only seems so because we are being supported by so many people in so many different conditions, and it allows us for our attention to be elsewhere. But when we run out of gas or we lose our glasses, all of a sudden those little things grab our attention, and suddenly we realize just how dependent we are on one another and how important those little things are. When we list all the things that we receive from other people, it grounds us in the humble reality that we are profoundly interconnected with one another, that we can't be separate from one another. We're connected. Then he asks the next question, what have I been given? Man, this is a brutal one. I hate this question because it's really humbling. Now, I'd like to think of myself as a generous person and a kind person, but taking time to make a list from today about, you know, what have I given today? That tends to be a really short list. And furthermore, all the things that I can think of that I've done for others, you know, when I drill down, I mean, most of them are pretty self-serving, right? The things I do for others in the end are going to help me out. I give in order to receive. And you might want to think, well, hey, those who have served me, who have offered me something, they're pretty self-serving too, right? No, that is not allowed. You are not allowed to judge the motives of other people when you're doing these questions. You're only allowed to look at your own motives and your own self. Trying to be honest about this is something that's not Christian, not Jewish, it's not Buddhist, it's not Muslim. It's a human condition. And it's something that makes us more whole human beings. I think that's true because even Albert Einstein says that 100 times a day, I remind myself that my inner and outer life depends on the labors of others, living and dead, and that I must exert myself in order to give in the measure as I have received and am still receiving. Even Einstein had to exert himself to be reminded of how connected he is and how much he owes other people. Okay, last question. Are you ready? What trouble or inconvenience have I caused today? Wow. Do you think of yourself as a demanding person? I don't know about you, but I am making demands all the time. And the trouble and the inconvenience I cause is immense. Nothing huge, usually, unless you talk to Laura. But lots of little things that add up in the end. So if you spend a few minutes every night just looking back on the day, and you don't get caught up on the why or, you know, feeling bad or all of those things about it, you just note these things. You just make note of them. And that's the beginning of the discipline. Now, it may seem silly, but this simple devotional each night is a practice that people have testified to having been effective in helping them kind of reorder the way they interact with people, the way they live in the world. Over time, being grateful for what we receive, generous in what we give, and wary of the difficulties that we cause become a part of who we are. And if you go back and look at the passage that we have today, note that the sheep ask, hey, what are you talking about? When did we do that good stuff for you? I don't remember that. They don't remember because it was a part of the way they lived their lives. It was not something that they had to go out of their way to do. It had just become second nature to them by practice. So practicing this sacred art of loving kindness is not something that just comes naturally. We've got a lot working against us. First, we have to open ourselves to the Spirit's urging to have us overcome a lot of our primal, tribal DNA and the messages of our culture that we live in. And then we can start to be on about doing right by others, not just as another thing that we have to do, but as a way of life that reflects the essence of what Jesus calls us to be on about in the world. This is at the heart of it. This is at the core of it, which takes us to our stream of thought. Learn to love without condition. Talk without bad intention. Give without reason. I think I like that, you know, I like that one, give without reason is my, it doesn't mean you don't have a reason to give. I think it means give irrationally, right? Just, woo, give. And most of all, care for people without any expectation. Can we do that? Something we gotta really work on. Once upon a time, there was a school teacher who every year would say the same thing to her students. She'd say, boys and girls, I love you all the same. I love you all the same. I have no favorites. Well, this teacher, being a human being, was not being completely honest, because every teacher has favorites. And all of us have people that really irritate us and annoy us. One year, there was a boy that right off the bat truly tried this teacher's patience. He was uninterested in school. He had this kind of blank expression on his face. And more often than not, he answered, you know, answered a question with a shrug, clearly just not engaged at all with what was going on. His clothes were wrinkled. His hair was never combed. And he didn't apply himself to his work. So that more often than not, he was getting failing grades in everything. When his parents didn't respond to a request from her to get together to talk about what they could do and work on his progress, the teacher knew that there was something more afoot. So she went back and looked in some of his older records. She discovered that his mother had been seriously ill for all of first and second grades. And in the third grade, his mother died. By the time he got to fourth grade, he had fallen so far behind, it was almost hopeless that he would ever catch up. And a note from the fourth grade teacher at the end of the year said that his father showed no interest in the boy's work, no interest in helping him at school. The next day, after a sleepless night, that teacher was a new person. She was not only determined to help that one boy, but was recommitted to all of her children, especially the slower ones. And as the year unfolded, the boy who was ripe for being counted out began to show signs of improvement. Come Christmas, all the children brought gifts to the teacher and piled them on her desk, and they all crowded around the desk so they could watch up close as she opened each one. And among the presents was a disheveled wad of brown paper bag wrapping material, just barely held together with scotch tape, and scrawled across it was a note that said, "For Miss Thompson, from Teddy." Well, as she opened Teddy's gift, out tumbled a gaudy rhinestone bracelet with most of the stones missing and a half-used bottle of cheap perfume. Well, the kids started to giggle and, you know, but Miss Thompson was on it, and she immediately put that bracelet on, And she put some of that perfume on and shared it with the kids. Isn't that lovely? And the kids took the hint and started to say, ooh, ah, that's wonderful. That day, Teddy was the last one to leave the classroom. And as he left, he said to Miss Thompson, you smell like my mother. Her bracelet looks really good on you too. By the end of the year, Teddy had caught up with most of the other kids. In fact, he was even ahead of some of them. Teddy and Miss Thompson said their end of the year goodbyes, and that was pretty much it. 4 years later, 4 years later, Mrs. Thompson received a note in the mail. It said, Dear Miss Thompson, I wanted you to be the first to know I will be graduating second in my class. Love, Teddy. Four more years. Another note comes in the mail. Dear Miss Thompson, I just received the news that I will be graduating first in my class. I wanted you to be the first to know. Love, Teddy. Four more years later, another note. Dear Miss Thompson, as of today, I am Theodore Stollard, MD. How about that? I wanted you to be the first to know. I'm also getting married this summer, and I would be honored if you would come and sit where my mother would have sat if she were still alive. Love, Teddy. That teacher went to the wedding. She sat where the boy's mother would have sat, and she deserved to be there. And they will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? When did you see us doing right by others? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.